The following is a KCMT KNMT color presentation. And now a debate between two candidates for election to the Senate of the United States. Former Senator and Vice President Hubert Humphrey and the present Congressman from Minnesota's 3rd District, Clark McGregor. This debate is brought to you on television as a public service by your full service bank, where you have your checking account.
Good evening and welcome to this, the first televised debate in this Senate campaign. Through negotiations with the campaign offices of Mr. Humphrey and Mr. McGregor, a format agreeable to both parties has been selected. 4 mid-Minnesota newsmen will be asking questions of each candidate on an alternating basis. The candidate to whom a question is asked will be allowed 1 minute and 30 seconds for his answer, his opponent 45 seconds for additional comment, or if he so chooses, rebuttal time. Participating are former Vice President Hubert Humphrey, former Mayor of Minneapolis, a United States Senator, and unsuccessful candidate for the presidency in 1968. The Republican candidate is Minnesota's 3rd District Congressman, Clark McGregor. McGregor has served in Congress for the past 10 years. We'll be back to introduce our panelists in just a minute.
Your full-service banker hopes tonight's debate will help you decide which way to vote. But perhaps more important, it will convince you that you should take full advantage of your right to vote. Whether you don't vote or don't vote, you're still going to live under one form of government or another. Well, the thing to remember is people generally get just the kind of government they want, especially when they don't vote. It's your government. Have a say in it. Vote.
Participating in tonight's debate are 4 mid-Minnesota newsmen. Let's introduce them. First of all, Fred Berry, news director, WJON Radio, St. Cloud. Les Selnau, city editor of the Brainerd Daily Dispatch. Marv Bossert, newscaster for WDAY Television in Fargo. And Bruce Nelson, political reporter for the St. Cloud Daily Times. The candidates will be allowed to make a 3-minute opening statement. By a flip of the coin, Mr. Humphrey will be the first to speak. At the close of the debate, Mr. McGregor will speak finally. Mr. Humphrey.
Well, we're here to discuss the most important business of people, namely the business of representative government. And government policy must be judged by how it affects people. And it's on the basis of that standard that I ask you to judge the policies of the Republican administration and the record of my opponent. Now, first, let's take a look at this economy of ours. Is it healthy and is it growing? What are the facts? Not what is the political rhetoric? Well, I think the first fact is that the cost of living is at an all-time high and it continues to grow at an annual rate of a little over 6%, eroding our savings and chewing up our income. Secondly, unemployment continues to rise. It's now over 5%, and the prediction is that by next summer it will be over 6%. 1.5 million more people are out of work today than were 20 months ago, and another 1 million by next year. Interest rates are the highest in 100 years. There's tight money and high interest, which makes credit very costly. Our economy is at a standstill, and it is estimated that we're losing $1 billion per week in lost production and work, which results in billions of dollars of lost revenue needed for vital programs for federal, state, and local government. Housing construction is the lowest that it's been in 10 years, and young couples that want to buy a house can't seem to afford it if they can get mortgage money, and the elderly are being denied the housing that they need. With our schools in difficulty, with property tax the highest that they've been in years, they're at 53% increase the last 3 years here in Minnesota. We've had an administration that's vetoed 2 federal aid to education bills that would have helped Minnesota education. And my opponent voted to sustained one veto and reversed himself and voted to override the other. At a time when we need to expand our battle against disease, to provide more hospital beds for civilians and for veterans, and to do something about rehabilitation for our crippled, the Republican administration vetoes a bill, crippling medical schools and slowing down medical research. My opponent voted to sustain that veto. And in doing so, he voted against funds for the expansion of the Wilmar State Wilmar Rice Memorial Hospital, Moorhead St. Ansgar Hospital, Benson Hospital, the Alexandria Douglas County Hospital, the Wadena Memorial Hospital. That veto cost Minnesota $11,275,000. And rural Minnesota hasn't escaped the crippling effects of these Republican policies either. In the month of August, we had the sharpest decline in farm prices in 22 years. The parity ratio is the lowest it's been since 1933. And the Republican administration seeks to pass through the Congress, insisting upon it, a farm bill which is repudiated by 24 farm organizations. I think we can judge an administration by what it does to people, and what it's doing is not good.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. And now an introductory statement from Congressman Clark McGregor.
Thank you very much, Bob, and Mr. Humphrey, and gentlemen of the panel, ladies and gentlemen. One of the great strengths of Minnesota is the political diversity of opinion by the people of Minnesota. One of the great strengths of representative government occurs when diversity of opinion is reflected in the legislature. You know, that's true in the United States House of Representatives, where Minnesota has 5 Republicans and 3 DFLers. It's reflected in the state legislature, where the people of Minnesota prefer to elect a majority of conservatives over liberals. The only place that representative government is denied the opportunity to work for Minnesota as it should is in the United States Senate. We've had a left-to-center monopoly of opinion in the Senate for 12 long years. It's time to change that this year. I'll tell you the thing that strikes me as very important in this Senate campaign, and that is that Minnesota be making a serious mistake to return to the United States Senate a man whose judgment has been very bad on the record. First, of course, they'd be perpetuating the monopoly of ultra-liberal philosophy and ultra-liberal policy in the United States Senate. But more often than that, my opponent has shown that his language has been loose and his judgment has been bad on critical issues, war and peace, justice, law and order, and on the very important question of inflation, spending, and taxes. But let me tell you 2 illustrations that disturb me more than anything else. My opponent doesn't have conviction. My opponent is just as ready to change his opinion when the political opinion polls show that that would be the politically expedient thing to do. And he's quickly to follow the dictates of a party leader or party boss. Let me give you 2 examples. In 1962, when everyone was worried about the introduction of Russian missiles into Cuba, I was too. I was a congressman. I introduced a resolution calling for a quarantine. Mr. Kennedy adopted the course I recommended. Mr. Humphrey called me Cornfield General for recommending the course that Mr. Kennedy followed, and he praised Mr. Kennedy lavishly for following my recommendation. Let me tell you about a bill for tax credits for the parents of middle America sending youngsters to college. Mr. Humphrey authored that bill in 1963. I've authored it too. It had broad bipartisan support. But in February of 1964, LBJ was opposed to it. Mr. Humphrey turned 180 degrees. He voted against his own bill, and he got enough senators to go along and reverse their course so as to defeat the proposal. Now, that's the sort of old politics I'm talking about. That's the sort of political expediency we've got to replace in Minnesota. When Mr. Johnson was president, Hubert Humphrey was a hawk in Vietnam, thought it was our great adventure. Now he supports or agrees in principle with his party's program for immediate and unconditional withdrawal. He has taken the same duplicitous positions on justice, law, and order, and on inflation. You and I are paying $3 million in taxes today just to pay the interest on the added debt that was accumulated during the last 8 years that he was in power in Washington.
Thank you, Mr. McGregor. Now our panel of newsmen placing the first question, Fred Berry, News Director, WJON.
Mr. Humphrey, the Pentagon this morning released information that Russia is thought to be establishing a submarine base in Cuba. Should this be true, and should the Russian submarines be armed with nuclear weapons, would you favor any type of confrontation such as we all remember during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Well, I'm not going to advise the president on a matter as delicate as that, and I wouldn't be even introducing a resolution about it. I think that the president of the United States must take a good look at what the facts are. We don't have the facts yet. We have some facts. We have some information. I don't think that the president of the United States wants me to be commenting upon what is a most likely and could be a very serious matter of national security from out here in Alexandria, Minnesota. I have faith that the president of the United States will protect the security of this country. If I go to the Senate, I hope to help him do just that.
Now, a comment from Congressman Clark McGregor.
I have always felt that a constructive resolution showed proper leadership when drafted and introduced by a member of Congress. I thought so in 1962, I think so in 1970, and if elected to the Senate, I will continue to put into resolution form my ideas as to how America might deal with its problems, whether those ideas lead to executive department action or action by the Congress. With respect to the news today or yesterday about the Russian submarines in Cuba, I think we're seeing an increase in degree of Russian involvement rather than a difference in kind. They've been operating those submarines for some time. Surely this is a situation that should be watched very carefully, and a situation where everyone in government or who aspires to be in government ought to offer constructive ideas.
Thank you, Mr. McGregor. Our next panelist, Mr. Les Salnow, Brainerd Daily Dispatch.
Mr. McGregor, in Brainerd, as in most cities, sure, across Minnesota, property owners are complaining that local taxes are becoming just a heavier and heavier burden. In many of our school districts, taxes have doubled in the past 5 years, for example. Do you believe that the federal government can and should relieve the property owner of some of this burden? If so, how should this be done and still not lose local control?
Les, the best way always to deal with our federal income tax code so as to address a problem from Washington but retain local control is through the avenue of tax credits. This is a time-tested method by which we seek to deal with problems in Washington without running the show from the bureaucracy there. I think serious consideration must be given, just as soon as the Federal Treasury is in a position to sustain this, to the idea of giving, particularly to older people, a partial credit against federal income taxes for the real estate taxes that they have to pay. In other words, when they have put their youngsters through school, when they have to deal with the high cost of property taxes, it seems to me they ought to get some relief from the federal government on income taxes. Now, that doesn't do the whole problem, because you've got some people, elderly people who own their own homes, who don't pay any federal income taxes, but at least this is an approach that I will study very carefully if I'm privileged to be elected to the Senate. This idea of tax credits is a great way to approach the problem. You know, we give people a deduction from their gross income before figuring their federal income taxes for the interest on a home mortgage. This encourages people to be homeowners. We ought to keep people in their homes if we possibly can by giving the relief I've suggested to burden some local property taxes.
Thank you, Mr. McGregor. Mr. Humphrey?
First of all, I'd make it quite clear that 75% of the older people of this country do not have sufficient income to pay federal taxes. That's number one. Secondly, I would suggest that the property taxes are so high at the present time that the relief that they need is a large injection of federal aid to education. And every educator in the country, with few exceptions, says that's what is needed. And not vetoes, not less, but more. And may I just respond a moment to the tax credit? When I introduced my bill for tax credit, there was no federal aid to education. The choice was between tax credits, which some would get, and federal aid to education, which would help the poor and the middle income and the upper income together. Now, I voted for the federal aid to education bill. My opponent did not, and he has not supported educational measures.
Well, our next question is Marv Bossert from WDAY-TV.
Mr. Humphrey, along this same line, as long as we're on it, do you favor a guaranteed income for the poor?
I favor the, yes, a form of guaranteed income, income maintenance. I think that President Nixon's proposal that he has presented bears is very meritorious. I doubt that it goes far enough, but I think it is a very good beginning. And if I'm permitted to go to the United States Senate, I hope to be able to support constructive efforts like that. You see, I don't intend to go to the Senate as a man that just tries to pick on presidents. I intend to go there to pick and choose. When I think he's doing well, he'll have my support. When I disagree with him, he'll have my opposition. I happen to believe that our present welfare system is an anachronism, and in many ways, it's an insult to the people. We need a welfare system, a program of income maintenance for people that cannot work, that in a family situation must take care of their family. But we also need a program of work and of work training to put people who are capable of employment back on the job. But in order to do that, Marv, you've got to have an economy that's growing. You can train people for jobs today, but there are no jobs. There are young people today graduating from college, as they did last spring, with no jobs. And if you're going to have a work program as well as a humanitarian welfare program, you have to have an expanding economy that makes it possible for those who you want to have work, who you train for work, to be able to go into work. The people that have been laid off recently are the very people who were trained under other programs. They were the last hired, and now they're the first fired. I say that's a cruel way of doing business.
With response, Congressman McGregor.
Barb, we've gone somewhat afield from your question. Your question again?
The question was, do you favor a guaranteed annual income for the poor?
I voted for the very comprehensive, very exciting family assistance program, which is a welfare reform program. It passed the House of Representatives last year. I'm pleased to say that this initiative of the Republican administration, an initiative which was totally lacking in the preceding administration, received bipartisan support in the House of Representatives. I have looked with some sadness at the United States Senate to see the tired old men of Hubert Humphrey's party who run the show in the United States Senate drag their feet on the consideration of this very comprehensive, very exciting program which will deal with the working poor. It'll keep them working, but enable them to supplement their income with federal assistance. This is a workfare program, not really a welfare program.
We'll continue our debate in just one moment.
This evening, you're present while two capable men who seek your vote expound their viewpoints on subjects important to you. The viewpoints differ, which helps to determine which is closer to your way of looking at things and which man you want to represent you in government. That's why we hold debates and elections, to let voters exercise freedom of choice. Your full-service banker, the man who displays this symbol, reminds you that all our freedoms rest on this first freedom, the freedom of choice. Exercise it. Vote.
In continuing tonight's debate between Mr. Humphrey and Mr. McGregor, a question from Bruce Nelson, St. Cloud Daily Times.
Congressman, you and your opponent quarreled earlier this week over your respective backgrounds on farm legislation. Mr. Humphrey attacked your farm voting record, and you in turn claimed that farmers suffered major setbacks during the Johnson-Humphrey administration. Now, irregardless of past performances, Congress will in the next session be faced with legislation extending collective bargaining rights to farmers. Where do you stand on that issue, Congressman?
I do not favor congressional action to deal with this question. I think that it's possible for groups that believe very strongly in organization to organize under existing laws. I think that the NFO has done an excellent job of bringing the message to farmers that the opportunities are there to permit them to deal collectively with their respective individual problems, just as is provided with other elements of the farm economy. But you referred to these criticisms and about background in farming. I think that your listeners should know that my grandfather came from Scotland and was farming in central Minnesota three generations ago. I've got my roots deep in the soil in Minnesota. And for somebody to suggest that I have voted against the Minnesota farmers is ridiculous. The truth of the matter is that I have voted in a very similar pattern with Minnesota's four farm congressmen, Odin Langan, John Zwack, Anker Nelson, and Al Quie. I think that my farm record has been good, and I think my opponent does too. I've cast over 100 votes on agriculture legislation that directly or indirectly affect Minnesota agriculture and agribusiness. He picked out five and he criticized them. It must be that 95 he agrees with. 95 used to be a passing grade, and I'm surprised that the professor doesn't give me an A.
With comment, Mr. Humphrey.
Well, the reason the professor doesn't give you an A, Congressman, is because you missed the important questions and you got on the trivia. In 1961, you voted against the Emergency Feed Grain Act. You voted against the Agricultural Act of 1961. You voted against the Feed Grains Act of 1963, the import meat import quotas of 1964. You voted to recommit the Agricultural Act of 1965, and recommit is a nice word to kill. And then you reversed yourself with the other Republican congressmen and decided to vote for it. I have to tell you also, Mr. Congressman, that in those dark years of the 50s of the Republican administration, Minnesota farm income went down from $531 million to $462 million net income. It went up after 1961 from $462 million up to $676 million.
Mr. Humphrey, I have a question I'd like to ask you. The Nixon administration has urged college administrators, those who run college campuses, to take a firmer hand in dealing with unrest on the college campuses. Would you comment on that?
Well, I think that there has to be a firmer hand in dealing with unrest, not only on college campuses, but lawlessness and crime and disorder throughout our country. Now, having urged the administrators of college campuses to take a firmer stand, that doesn't necessarily end the problem. Our universities today are bulging the seams. 10 years ago, we had 3 million people in our universities, students. Today, we have over 7 million. That problem within itself poses a major, serious problem to the administrators and the teachers of universities. I would hope that we would look upon our universities with some sense of perspective. There are some militants. There are some people who seek to destroy. There are those that commit acts of disorder and violence. But 95% of the students at universities today are working hard or harder than any student body in the history of this country. The students at our universities, many of them are actively engaged in volunteer operations. Thousands of them indeed. Speaking of our own University of Minnesota, I think that Dr. Malcolm Moose has done one of the finest jobs of administrating a university of any university president in the United States. And he's to be commended. We've had a modest amount, a very little amount, of campus violence here in the state of Minnesota. But I do suggest that university administrators, in consultation with faculty, take a stand against those who disrupt classes, who in any way seek to destroy the academic standing of a university, who seek to use violence and disorder as a remedy for what they consider to be the lack of proper university curriculum.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Mr. McGregor?
Bob, I'd like to see all colleges and universities adopt the sort of plan that's known as the Father Hesburgh Notre Dame plan. That is, have every matriculating freshman be made aware of the rules of conduct and discipline on the campus. And when there's a takeover of a building or a denial of the rights of the great majority of the students by the radical few, to give them a period of time to straighten up and fly right. And if they don't do it, then the ultimate penalty, of course, is expulsion. I think this is a sound program. I don't believe that the federal government ought to be dictating codes of disciplinary conduct on the campus. But I do think that those in public office should not also be encouraging, by their loose talk, the resort to violence or revolution as a way to effect social change or to deal with problems. My opponent has done exactly that. I won't do that. I haven't, and I won't in the Senate.
We'll return in just a moment.
Your full-service banker who displays this symbol takes pleasure in presenting this evening's debate in the hope that it will stimulate thinking and action on some of the governmental and political issues of the day. The county, Douglas County, in which this debate is conducted was named after one of America's greatest debaters, Stephen A. Douglas. His debates with Abraham Lincoln prior to the Civil War had a profound effect on American history. Please give thoughtful consideration to the viewpoints of both men. The future they're discussing is yours.
By previous agreement, this portion of the program has been reserved for closing comments from both candidates. May we hear first from Mr. Humphrey.
Well, I've said in the beginning that we should judge by the facts and not by the rhetoric, and I think I shall maintain that position. Now, my opponent has seen fit to indicate that I would incite to violence and to revolution, indicating a lack of attention and concern about law and order. I would say to this that first I served as mayor of a great city, and I gave my city law and order as the mayor, where you are really tested. I was the author of the first important anti-narcotics drug bill in the 1950s and 60s, known as the Durham-Humphrey Act, which put dangerous drugs and habit-forming drugs under prescription and under medical direction. I was a co-sponsor of the Juvenile Delinquency Control Act. During the 50s and 60s, not much legislation took place in this area because crime had not become, as it has now, that great national problem. I don't happen to believe that crime and violence is a partisan issue. I think my opponent wants law and order in this country just as I do. I think the Republican governor wants it just exactly as our candidate on the Democratic ticket wants it. And I think what we ought to be doing is joining together to get it. I've heard my opponent even quote me out of context in reference to speech that I have made, when he quotes a speech from New Orleans, but he did not go far enough to say that in the next paragraph of that very same speech that I said, we cannot condone violence, nor shall we. nor is it necessary to remedy the things that need to be done in this country. And I would remind him that only recently his own president in a cabinet meeting said that if he were a black man, he too might be a revolutionary. I happen to think that what President Nixon meant by that was that there were many grievances which caused people to be very disillusioned. Now let's take a look at the record. That's what really determines a man for the future, gives some indication of what he's done in the past. I stand before you as the author of the Peace Corps, as one of the proponents and authors of federal aid to elementary and secondary education as well as higher education, as the originator of Medicare, introducing the first bill in May 1949, as a constant exponent of full parity for our farmers, as the author of the resolution for the nuclear test ban treaty and was sent to Moscow by President Kennedy as one of the signers of that treaty, as an author of housing legislation, the author of the original author of the food stamp, and of student loans. My associate and my opponent in this race voted against Medicare for our elderly. He voted against the food stamp plan to help feed the needy people of this country. And in so doing, he not only hurt people, but our farm economy. He voted against Social Security benefits to elderly people who had not previously been eligible, against federal scholarships and loans for needy college students. He voted to recommit a report on the Vocational Education Act of 1963, which would have, if his vote had been conclusive, would have denied us this great technical institute that we have here. I ask that we look to the future based upon the record of what we have performed in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Humphrey. Now closing comments from Congressman McGregor.
Mr. Humphrey has taken a few selected votes and from the standpoint of an ultra-liberal Democrat has criticized the fact that I was not an ultra-liberal Democrat and didn't go down the line for that philosophy. What he hasn't told you is that in every one of those negative situations that he describes, I voted against the ultra-liberal point of view because the centrist point of view had an alternative program that would have been better. It wouldn't have built up the huge bureaucracy. It wouldn't have incurred such crippling federal debts. It would have given people a greater chance to participate at the local and state level in the decision making. It would have made a living example of participatory democracy, which you can't have when you follow the Hubert Humphrey approach of concentrating power, money, and discretionary authority in the bureaucracy in Washington. Yes, I'm pleased to stand on my record, and I'm pleased to correct some mistakes, which Mr. Humphrey, I'm sure, has inadvertently made. When he said that the effect of my vote to sustain a presidential veto and to try and save us from following the Humphrey path of huge deficit spending and inflation, he forgot to tell you that the appropriations process, once an appropriations bill is vetoed, goes to work on the bill again. Not a one of those hospitals that he mentioned will lose a dime by virtue of the presidential veto or of the action of Congress in sustaining that veto. What will be cut out of the new appropriation bill will be $250 million extra for urban renewal that the big spending Democratic Congress saddled on the president and on the country. No, it's an interesting thing in this campaign. Both of us are saying we'll support the president when he's right and we'll oppose him when he's wrong. But there's a big difference. If I'm in the Senate in January, I'll find the president right most of the time. Hubert Humphrey will find him wrong virtually all of the time. We already have a senator from Minnesota whose term has 2 years to run, who finds him wrong most of the time. I think that those people in Minnesota who get no voice when we continue this monopoly of ultra-liberal representation in the Senate, which we've had for 12 years, I think you ought to be represented in Congress. You people out there who are moderates, you people who have a centrist point of view, who have an idea other than the down-the-line ultra-liberal philosophy, I'd like to work for you, just like I've worked for the people of Anoka County and suburban and rural Hennepin County these last few years. And I want to say to my opponent, I was very pleased by something he just said. He said we ought to be joining together to pass legislation. I worked in 1963 with John Lindsay of New York and Bill Cahill, now governor of New Jersey, and Mac Mathias, senator from Maryland, to do the fundamental spade work on what became the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I played a major role in reforming our immigration laws in 65. I drafted and got passed the principal title or section of the Omnibus Crime Control Bill. And for the last 3 weeks, we've seen the culmination of my efforts and that of others without regard to party to pass meaningful legislation to deal with the crippling problem of organized crime and of bombing And I've asked my opponent to help get the Congress controlled by his party to show a sense of urgency. His answer is we're playing games. When you're talking about terror bombings and the vice of organized crime, it isn't gamesmanship, it's a matter of life or death.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGregor and Mr. Humphrey. And we would like to thank our panelists participating this evening, Mr. Berry from St. Cloud, Mr. Selno from Brainerd, Mr. Bossert from Fargo, North Dakota, and Mr. Nelson from St. Cloud. And we'd like to thank you. Good night.
This debate has been brought to you on television as a public service by your full-service bank. Look for this symbol. It marks the place that offers you checking accounts, savings accounts, and every kind of loan.